This is the listening paper of the National Examination in English. You will hear three different texts and do tasks on all of them. Turn to task one. Task one. You are going to hear a text about technology in the wilderness. You will hear the text twice. Before you listen, read the sentences below. While you listen, choose the correct letter, A, B or C, tick the appropriate box. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 60 seconds to read the notes.
Have you ever gone deep into the backcountry only to see someone using a wireless phone? What about a GPS receiver? Are these things part of a real wilderness experience? This week on the Wildebeat.
The wilderness is a place where hikers and backpackers can experience nature in its purest form. But is that sense of nature maintained when they carry and use high-tech communication devices in the backcountry? Paul Magnanti is a Triple Crown hiker, experienced outdoorsman, and author of the blog site pmags.com. He wrote an essay titled The Culture of Connectivity about staying connected in the outdoors.
In recent years, there has been an increased emphasis on what I call the culture of connectivity. As a society, we're beginning to expect that we can be on the grid at all times. And this expectation is starting to become an expectation for everyone. We can be reached at all times and should be reached at all times. This attitude is starting to seep into the backcountry. Personal locator beacons and such devices as Spark are touted as must-have items by various outdoor publications. No longer should you just have a map, a compass, and other standard gear. No, you must have a device that will let you be tracked and be in communication at all times. People have posted about their upcoming trips over the last months in the backcountry. The questions most often asked now is not about gear or resupply or impressions of a particular area. Rather, the question is usually, how do I stay connected while on the trail? The subtle, or perhaps not so subtle, implication for devices like Spot that only fools go into the wilderness without these magical devices. I'm afraid this expected 24/7 connectivity will become increasingly common in the years to come, not just on a technological level, but on a cultural level too. We are getting to the point where it is no longer your preference to stay connected, but it's the expectation that everyone will be connected.
The devices Paul is talking about in his essay are satellite phones, cell phones, and GPS locators. We spoke with Derek Moore, the manager of marketing and public relations at Spot LLC, to get a better sense of how these devices are used.
So Spot is a 7.3-ounce small handheld consumer satellite communications product, and it's meant to be used in the outdoors where the user has a line of sight with the sky. And Spot enables the user to send an okay message to family and friends, letting them know on their cell phones and or emails where they are and that they're okay. There's also a help button to notify for non-emergency assistance and a 911 button, which is an emergency response notification in case you need help quick.
Greg Fouth is the wilderness manager at Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks. He questions whether using these devices allows hikers and backpackers to connect with the wilderness or keeps them tied to civilization.
When the Wilderness Act was written, it talked about wilderness should be a place that is untrammeled, that is a place sort of free from the modern restraints of society. It should be a place that is primeval, a place where one can seek solitude and primitive recreation. And those are specific words right out of the Wilderness Act, with a summation that wilderness is a place where you disconnect from the normal aspects of modern life and its technology.
I think the experience has changed in the last 30 years fairly dramatically due to increases in the technological world of both high-tech backpacking equipment, but also the gizmos that tend to, in my opinion, separate people a little bit more from the wilderness experience.
Laurel Boyers is a retired wilderness manager for Yosemite National Park. She worries about technology and how it's changed backcountry use.
That if they're charting their way on a handheld GPS rather than looking around at the mountains around them for route finding, I'm sorry, I think that's a loss of a connection with the mountains that is part of the wilderness experience. With that said, I also fully admit that I do that myself and have done it and carry a handheld radio to keep in touch for my work and, you know, use maps that are certainly much more technologically advanced than people had only 50, 80 years ago. So we're all a creature of our era, I suppose, but I do mourn that a bit.
Some folks don't feel safe unless they have some level of connectivity there. Hopefully they would soon learn that the safety that those devices afford are fairly limited, and that their ability to go out and be personally responsible for their own safety through good decisions would allow them to release that connectivity and really take full advantage of a wildland unconnected experience.
What we've been hearing from search and rescue units is, hey, Spot takes the search out of search and rescue, where before they might have to spend 2 days and 50 responders out in the field spending time utilizing their resources. With Spot, your GPS message tells them exactly where you are, and oftentimes that can be the matter of saving somebody's life or death.
It does provide us some good coordinates, so we know exactly where the incident is, but it doesn't really provide us some of the other information that's pretty valuable when we go out to address a situation and try to remedy it. You know, is it a law enforcement situation where someone has been assaulted? Is it an emergency medical situation where someone has fallen off a rock and broken a leg? So we kind of go in there not really knowing what it is other than it's some level of emergency. And if they're able to somehow get word out via another party member to a ranger to give real information, that's certainly better. I think people, especially from the emergency standpoint, they have a stronger expectation that that service is back there. Folks bring their cell phones, and if they can get coverage, they may dial 911 for some relatively minor problems, and they tend to want that assistance. You know, and this is somewhat just my personal feeling, but 25 years ago, folks tended to be a little more ready to assist themselves in getting out of the wilderness if there was a problem.
Do these communication devices act as a safety net for risk takers? Should they even be a part of wilderness adventures? And what's the difference between challenging oneself and an actual emergency?
Listen again and check your answers.
Have you ever gone deep into the backcountry only to see someone using a wireless phone? What about a GPS receiver? Are these things part of a real wilderness experience? This week on the Wildebeat.
The wilderness is a place where hikers and backpackers can experience nature in its purest form. But is that sense of nature maintained when they carry and use high-tech communication devices in the backcountry? Paul Magnanti is a Triple Crown hiker, experienced outdoorsman, and author of the blog site pmags.com. He wrote an essay titled The Culture of Connectivity about staying connected in the outdoors.
In recent years, there has been an increased emphasis on what I call the culture of connectivity. As a society, we are beginning to expect that we can be on the grid at all times. And this expectation is starting to become an expectation for everyone. We can be reached at all times and should be reached at all times. This attitude is starting to seep into the backcountry. Personal locator beacons and such devices as Spark are touted as must-have items by various outdoor publications. No longer should you just have a map, a compass, and other standard gear. No, you must have a device that will let you be tracked and be in communication at all times. People have posted about their upcoming trips over the last months in the backcountry. The questions most often asked now is not about gear or resupply or impressions of a particular area. Rather, the question is usually, how do I stay connected while on the trail? The subtle, or perhaps not so subtle, implication for devices like Spot that only fools go into the wilderness without these magical devices. I'm afraid this expected 24/7 connectivity will become increasingly common in the years to come, not just on a technological level, but on a cultural level too. We are getting to the point where it is no longer your preference to stay connected, but it's the expectation that everyone will be connected.
The devices Paul is talking about in his essay are satellite phones, cell phones, and GPS locators. We spoke with Derek Moore, the manager of marketing and public relations at Spot LLC, to get a better sense of how these devices are used.
So Spot is a 7.3-ounce small handheld consumer satellite communications product, and it's meant to be used in the outdoors where the user has a line of sight with the sky. And Spot enables the user to send an okay message to family and friends, letting them know on their cell phones and or emails where they are and that they're okay. There's also a help button to notify for non-emergency assistance and a 911 button, which is an emergency response notification in case you need help quick.
Greg Fouth is the wilderness manager at Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks. He questions whether using these devices allows hikers and backpackers to connect with the wilderness or keeps them tied to civilization.
When the Wilderness Act was written, it talked about wilderness should be a place that is untrammeled, that is a place sort of free from the modern restraints of society. It should be a place that is primeval, a place where one can seek solitude and primitive recreation. And those are specific words right out of the Wilderness Act, with a summation that wilderness is a place where you disconnect from the normal aspects of modern life and its technology.
I think the experience has changed in the last 30 years fairly dramatically due to increases in the technological world of both high-tech backpacking equipment, but also the gizmos that tend to, in my opinion, separate people a little bit more from the wilderness experience.
Laurel Boyers is a retired wilderness manager for Yosemite National Park. She worries about technology and how it's changed backcountry use.
That if they're charting their way on a handheld GPS rather than looking around at the mountains around them for route finding, I'm sorry, I think that's a loss of a connection with the mountains that is part of the wilderness experience. With that said, I also fully admit that I do that myself and have done it and carry a handheld radio to keep in touch for my work and, you know, use maps that are certainly much more technologically advanced than people had only 50, 80 years ago. So we're all a creature of our era, I suppose, but I do mourn that a bit.
Some folks don't feel safe unless they have some level of connectivity there. Hopefully they would soon learn that the safety that those devices afford are fairly limited and that their ability to go out and be personally responsible for their own safety through good decisions would allow them to release that connectivity and really take full advantage of a wildland unconnected experience.
What we've been hearing from search and rescue units is, hey, Spot takes the search out of search and rescue. Where before they might have to spend 2 days and 50 responders out in the field spending time utilizing the resources. With Spot, your GPS message tells them exactly where you are, and oftentimes that can be the matter of saving somebody's life or death.
It does provide us some good coordinates so we know exactly where the incident is, but it doesn't really provide us some of the other information that's pretty valuable when we go out to address a situation and try to remedy it. You know, is it a law enforcement situation where someone has been assaulted? Is it an emergency medical situation where someone has fallen off a rock and broken a leg? So we kind of go in there not really knowing what it is other than it's some level of emergency. And if they're able to somehow get word out via another party member to a ranger to give real information, that's certainly better. I think people, especially from the emergency standpoint, they have a stronger expectation that that service is back there. Folks bring their cell phones, and if they can get coverage, they may dial 911 for some relatively minor problems, and they tend to want that assistance. You know, this is somewhat just my personal feeling, but 25 years ago, folks tended to be a little more ready to assist themselves in getting out of the wilderness if there was a problem.
Do these communication devices act as a safety net for risk takers? Should they even be a part of wilderness adventures? And what's the difference between challenging oneself and an actual emergency?
This is the end of task one. Turn to task two. Task two. You are going to hear an interview with one of the organizers of the Olympic Games. You will hear it twice. Before you listen, read the notes below. While you listen, complete the notes. Write no more than four words in each gap. An example, zero, has been done for you. You now have 45 seconds to read the notes.
The Winter Olympic Games in Vancouver will take place from the 12th to the 28th of February 2010. Are pre-games volunteers already involved in the preparation for the games?
There are many pre-games volunteer opportunities prior to 2010. This will involve supporting many visits from delegations and events, and providing general assistance that will be required before the games. And the volunteer will be joining a team of 25,000 who will be welcoming the world to Canada.
And how do you apply for a pre-games volunteer position?
Well, you can use our online resume management system. And you can search all available pre-games volunteer positions. You create and submit your resume for pre-games volunteer positions. And then you register and set up an account to be notified of new pre-games volunteer opportunities.
And is there anything else the candidates need to know?
Yes, the candidate must be 19 years old on or before September the 1st, 2009. And for electronic communication, a valid email address and access to the internet must be used. And although pre-arranged accommodation is not a prerequisite, we would strongly recommend it.
So how is the problem of accommodation solved?
Through VANOC, the Vancouver Organising Committee for the 2010 Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games, and that's presently developing a homestay programme. And also, local families and community members offer complimentary accommodation.
Can people be sure they will get tickets for the Games?
Yes, on October the 3rd, 2008, 1.6 million tickets for the Olympic Winter Games went on sale, and in 2009, 250,000 tickets for the Paralympic Winter Games will go on sale. VANOC is also establishing a centralised resale and distribution resource centre where people can safely exchange and purchase tickets.
How is catering organised during the Games?
Well, there's a wide variety of hot and cold food and beverage items, and many healthy meal choices as well. To ensure health and safety issues, spectators won't be allowed to bring food or drink to any of the Olympic or Paralympic venues.
Okay. And besides food and drink, are there any other prohibited and restricted items or activities within the venue?
Yes. Bottles, glass containers, cans, weapons including knives and fireworks, skis, snowboards, bicycles, balls, frisbees, helmets, illegal drugs, animals of any kind, except service animals such as animals for the blind. Dangerous or disruptive behaviour, including public drunkenness, fighting, the threatening of venue staff, spitting is strictly prohibited, as is gambling and smoking, as is broadcasting or recording through the use of mobile phones or other recording or transmitting of any kind. And one last thing, the use of flash photography is also prohibited.
Wow, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Listen again and check your answers.
The Winter Olympic Games in Vancouver will take place from the 12th to the 28th of February 2010. Are pre-Games volunteers already involved in the preparation for the Games?
There are many pre-Games volunteer opportunities prior to 2010. This will involve supporting many visits from delegations and events, and providing general assistance that will be required before the Games. And the volunteer will be joining a team of 25,000 who will be welcoming the world to Canada.
Hmm. And how do you apply for a pre-Games volunteer position?
Well, you can use our online resume management system. And you can search all available pre-Games volunteer positions. You create and submit your resume for pre-Games volunteer positions. And then you register and set up an account to be notified of new pre-Games volunteer opportunities.
And is there anything else the candidates need to know?
Yes, the candidate must be 19 years old on or before September the 1st, 2009. And for electronic communication, a valid email address and access to the internet must be used. And although pre-arranged accommodation is not a prerequisite, we would strongly recommend it.
So how is the problem of accommodation solved?
Through VANOC, the Vancouver Organising Committee for the 2010 Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games, and that's presently developing a homestay programme. And also, local families and community members offer complimentary accommodation.
Can people be sure they will get tickets for the Games?
Yes, on October the 3rd, 2008, 1.6 million tickets for the Olympic Winter Games went on sale, and in 2009, 250,000 tickets for the Paralympic Winter Games will go on sale. VANOC is also establishing a centralised resale and distribution resource centre where people can safely exchange and purchase tickets.
How is catering organised during the Games?
Well, there's a wide variety of hot and cold food and beverage items, and many healthy meal choices as well. To ensure health and safety issues, spectators won't be allowed to bring food or drink to any of the Olympic or Paralympic venues.
Okay. And besides food and drink, are there any other prohibited and restricted items or activities within the venue?
Yes. Bottles, glass containers, cans, weapons including knives and fireworks, skis, snowboards, bicycles, balls, frisbees, helmets, illegal drugs, animals of any kind, except service animals such as animals for the blind. Dangerous or disruptive behaviour, including public drunkenness, fighting, the threatening of venue staff, spitting is strictly prohibited, as is gambling and smoking, as is broadcasting or recording through the use of mobile phones or other recording or transmitting of any kind. And one last thing, the use of flash photography is also prohibited.
Wow, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is the end of Task 2. Turn to Task 3. Task 3. You are going to hear 9 news items. You will hear each item twice. Before you listen, read the headlines below. While you listen, match the headlines, A to I, to the news items. Write the letters in the table. There is one headline you do not need. An example, 0, has been done for you. You now have 30 seconds to read the headlines. Item 0.
There could be little difference in how young salmon survive their journey down a free-flowing river compared to the heavily dammed Columbia River system, says a controversial new study. New acoustic tags, small enough to surgically implant in young fish, let biologists monitor young salmon migration survival in a big undammed river for the first time.
Item 25.
Genetic analysis reveals how a single species of bacterium thrives on its own 3 kilometres underground in a South African gold mine. An analysis of the organism's genome reveals that the bacterium has all the genetic tools it needs to harvest food and build itself from raw materials found in its environment. It is the first organism ever found in nature to live independently from other species.
Item 26. A fungus that causes meningitis has sickened 19 people, 4 of whom died, in Oregon and Washington over the past 4 years. The new findings indicate that the culprit is gradually making its way down the West Coast. Before 1999, the fungus was rarely encountered in North America. But that year, a case cropped up on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, Canada. Since then, more than 200 people in British Columbia have been diagnosed with illness stemming from the fungus. Item 27.
Scientists are using an electronic nose tailored to eavesdrop on plants that have been damaged or are under attack. The electronic nose, or e-nose, could be a valuable tool for monitoring pests in commercial greenhouses, allowing for better targeted pest control, researchers report in Environmental Science and Technology. A tailored e-nose could nip the problem in the bud, says Nigel Paul of Lancaster University in England, who led the research.
Item 28. Despite an international ban on ivory trading, the animals are being slaughtered for their tusks at a greater rate today than before the ban was enacted in 1989. Poaching is the worst in history right now, says Samuel K. Wasser, director of the Center for Conservation Biology at the University of Washington in Seattle. Before the ban, about 7.4% of animals were killed for their tusks each year. Estimates suggest that the annual rate is now 8%, which could bring African elephants to extinction by 2020. Item 29.
Every day is Christmas for a seed-eating bug with a fondness for pine cones. The insects home in on their dinner thanks to special infrared receptors that detect heat emitted by the conifer cones, scientists report. Infrared detection has been reported in some insects, such as Melanophila beetles that seek out forest fires because their young can only develop in freshly burnt wood. But this report is the first of seed predators specialising in detecting heat emitted by their host plant, says behavioural ecologist Stephen Takax, who led the new study.
Item 30. By electronically connecting a monkey's forearm muscles to its brain, researchers gave a temporarily paralysed monkey the ability to clench those muscles. An electrode implanted in the monkey's brain picked up the electrical signal from a single neuron, and the monkey learned to control the activity of that neuron to regain control of its wrist, even if the neuron was in a sensory rather than a muscle-controlling region of the brain. It's a powerful demonstration of the brain's flexibility, and for the first time that scientists have electronically linked a single neuron to an animal's own muscles, researchers report. Item 31.
Scientists from the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta and the East China Normal University in Shanghai selectively removed a shocking memory from a mouse's brain, the team reports. Such experiments may one day lead to therapies that can cause traumatic memories for people suffering post-traumatic stress disorder, or wipe clean drug-associated cues that lead addicts to relapse.
Item 32. A vaccine against diarrhea has provided potent protection in its first year of widespread use. Reporting at a meeting of microbiologists and infectious disease researchers, Scientists offered up several studies demonstrating that the oral vaccine has brought about a sharp decline in rotavirus infections in the United States during 2007 to 2008. Listen again and check your answers. Item 0.
There could be little difference in how young salmon survive their journey down a free-flowing river compared to the heavily dammed Columbia River system, says a controversial new study. New acoustic tags, small enough to surgically implant in young fish, let biologists monitor young salmon migration survival in a big, undammed river for the first time.
Item 25.
Genetic analysis reveals how a single species of bacterium thrives on its own 3 kilometres underground in a South African gold mine. An analysis of the organism's genome reveals that the bacterium has all the genetic tools it needs to harvest food and build itself from raw materials found in its environment. It is the first organism ever found in nature to live independently from other species.
Item 26. A fungus that causes meningitis has sickened 19 people, 4 of whom died, in Oregon and Washington over the past 4 years. The new findings indicate that the culprit is gradually making its way down the West Coast. Before 1999, the fungus was rarely encountered in North America. But that year, a case cropped up on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, Canada. Since then, more than 200 people in British Columbia have been diagnosed with illness stemming from the fungus. Item 27.
Scientists are using an electronic nose tailored to eavesdrop on plants that have been damaged or are under attack. The electronic nose, or e-nose, could be a valuable tool for monitoring pests in commercial greenhouses, allowing for better targeted pest control, researchers report in Environmental Science and Technology. A tailored e-nose could nip the problem in the bud, says Nigel Paul of Lancaster University in England, who led the research.
Item 28. Despite an international ban on ivory trading, the animals are being slaughtered for their tusks at a greater rate today than before the ban was enacted in 1989. Poaching is the worst in history right now, says Samuel K. Wasser, director of the Center for Conservation Biology at the University of Washington in Seattle. Before the ban, about 7.4% of animals were killed for their tusks each year. Estimates suggest that the annual rate is now 8%, which could bring African elephants to extinction by 2020. Item 29.
Every day is Christmas for a seed-eating bug with a fondness for pine cones. The insects home in on their dinner thanks to special infrared receptors that detect heat emitted by the conifer cones, scientists report. Infrared detection has been reported in some insects, such as melanophila beetles that seek out forest fires because their young can only develop in freshly burnt wood. But this report is the first of seed predators specialising in detecting heat emitted by their host plant, says behavioural ecologist Stephen Takax, who led the new study.
Item 30. By electronically connecting a monkey's forearm muscles to its brain, researchers gave a temporarily paralysed monkey the ability to clench those muscles. An electrode implanted in the monkey's brain picked up the electrical signal from a single neuron, and the monkey learned to control the activity of that neuron to regain control of its wrist, even if the neuron was in a sensory rather than a muscle-controlling region of the brain. It's a powerful demonstration of the brain's flexibility, and for the first time that scientists have electronically linked a single neuron to an animal's own muscles, researchers report. Item 31.
Scientists from the Medical College of Georgia in Augusta and the East China Normal University in Shanghai selectively removed a shocking memory from a mouse's brain, the team reports. Such experiments may one day lead to therapies that can cause traumatic memories for people suffering post-traumatic stress disorder, or wipe clean drug-associated cues that lead addicts to relapse.
Item 32. A vaccine against diarrhea has provided potent protection in its first year of widespread use. Reporting at a meeting of microbiologists and infectious disease researchers, scientists offered up several studies demonstrating that the oral vaccine has brought about a sharp decline in rotavirus infections in the United States during 2007 to 2008. This is the end of the listening paper. Now turn to the reading paper.